Hello, and welcome to the Dark Cryptids Podcast. I am your host, Devin Bloodworth. And the things that we discuss on this podcast include, but are not limited to, cryptids, paranormal encounters, dark history, and urban legends. I hope you enjoy this podcast. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Cryptids Podcast with me, your host, Devin Bloodworth. So, tonight's episode is going to be two old creepypastas I remember when I was younger, middle school. The first one, a few of you might know quite well, it's called Jeff the Killer. I'm going to kind of let that one speak for itself, but it's definitely, if you haven't ever heard of the creepypasta, Jeff the Killer, it's definitely worth the listen. Second one we're going to be reading off tonight is Smile Dog. That one I don't remember quite as well, but I do remember it being a good one too. Now, before we start the episode as well, I just want to let you guys know I am sick at the moment. Nothing too serious, just a cough and some congestion. So I apologize if I'm coughing during this podcast. I'll do my best to try to pause whenever I feel like I'm going to cough, but if a few slip in here and there, I apologize about that. I also want to go ahead and thank everyone for the amazing support on the last episode, the Russian Sleep Experiment, because I really enjoyed making that episode a lot. So I'm gonna, once again, thank everyone for that one. The Facebook page is also picking up quite nicely as well. Thank you to anyone that follows that. Thank you to anyone that follows that as well. That's where I post all my updates and whatnot. If you want to know where that's at, just go to Dark Cryptids Podcast on Facebook and it should pop up. But without further ado, let's go ahead and get into these readings. First reading is going to be Jeff the Killer. Excerpt from a local newspaper. Ominous unknown killer is still at large. After weeks of unexplained murders, the ominous unknown killer is still on the rise. After little evidence has been found, a young boy states that he survived one of the killer's attacks and bravely tells his story. "I had a bad dream and I woke up in the middle of the night," says the boy. "I saw that for some reason the window was open, even though I remember it being closed before I went to bed. I got up and shut it once more. Afterwards, I simply crawled under my covers and tried to get back to sleep. That's when I had a strange feeling, like someone was watching me. I looked up and nearly jumped out of my bed. There, in a little ray of light, illuminating from between my curtains, were a pair of two eyes. These weren't regular eyes. They were dark, ominous eyes. They were bordered in black and just plain out terrified me. That's when I saw his mouth. A long, horrendous smile that made every hair on my body stand up. The figure stood there, watching me. Finally, after what seemed like forever, he said it. A simple phrase, but said in a way only a madman could speak. He said, 'Go to sleep.' I let out a scream. That's what sent him at me. He pulled out a knife, aiming at my heart. He jumped on top of my bed. I fought him back. I kicked, I punched, I rolled around, trying to knock him off me. That's when my dad busted in. The man threw the knife. It went into my dad's shoulder. The man probably would have finished him off if one of the neighbors hadn't alerted the police. They drove into the parking lot and ran towards the door. The man turned and ran down the hallway. I heard a smash, like glass breaking. As I came out of my room, I saw the window that was pointing towards the back of my house was broken. I looked out it to see him vanish into the distance. I can tell you one thing, I'll never forget that face. Those cold, evil eyes and that psychotic smile. They'll never leave my head. Police are still on the lookout for this man. If you see anyone that fits the description in this story, please contact your local police department. Jeff and his family had just moved into a new neighborhood. His dad had gotten a promotion at work, and they thought it would be best to live in one of those fancy neighborhoods. Jeff and his brother Liu couldn't complain, though. A new, better house. What was not to love? As they were getting unpacked, one of their neighbors came by. "Hello," she said. "I'm Barbara. I live across the street from you. Well, I just wanted to introduce myself and to introduce my son." She turns around and calls her son over. "Billy, these are our new neighbors." Billy said hi and ran back to play in his yard. "Well," said Jeff's mom, "I'm Margaret, and this is my husband Peter, and my two sons, Jeff and Louie." They each introduced themselves, and then Barbara invited them to her son's birthday. Jeff and his brother were about to object when their mother said that they would love to. When Jeff and his family are done packing, Jeff went up to his mom. "Mom, why would you invite us to some kid's party? If you haven't noticed, I'm not some dumb kid." "Jeff," said his mother, "we just moved here. We should show that we want to spend time with our neighbors. Now, we're going to that party, and that's final." Jeff started to talk, but stopped himself, knowing that he couldn't do anything. Whenever his mom said something, it was final. He walked up to his room and plopped down on his bed. He sat there looking at his ceiling when, suddenly, he got a weird feeling. Not so much pain, but a weird feeling. He dismissed it as just some random feeling. He heard his mother call him down to get his stuff, and he walked down to get it. The next day, Jeff walked downstairs to get breakfast and got ready for school. As he sat there eating his breakfast, he once again got that feeling. This time it was stronger. It gave him a slight tugging pain, but he once again dismissed it. As he and Liu finished breakfast, they walked down to the bus stop. They sat there waiting for the bus, and then, all of a sudden, some kid on a skateboard jumped over them, only inches above their laps. They both jumped back in surprise. "Hey, what the hell?" The kid landed and turned back to them. He kicked his skateboard up and caught it with his hands. The kid seemed to be about 12, 1 year younger than Jeff. He wore an Aeropostale shirt and ripped blue jeans. "Well, well, well, it looks like we got some new meat." Suddenly, two other kids appeared. One was super skinny, and the other was huge. "Well, since you're new here, I'd like to introduce ourselves. Over there is Keith." Jeff and Liu looked over to the skinny kid. He had a dopey face that you would expect a sidekick to have. "And he's Troy." They looked over at the fat kid. Talk about a tub of lard. This kid looked like he hadn't exercised since he was crawling. "And I," said the first kid, "am Randy. Now, for all the kids in this neighborhood, there is a small price for bus fare, if you catch my drift." Liu stood up, ready to punch the lights out of the kid's eyes, when one of his friends pulled a knife on him. "I had hoped you would be more cooperative, but it seems we must do this the hard way." The kid walked up to Liu and took his wallet out of his pocket. Jeff got that feeling again. Now it was truly strong, a burning sensation. He stood up, but Liu gestured him to sit down. Jeff ignored him and walked up to the kid. "Listen here, you little punk. Give me back my bro's wallet or else." Randy put the wallet in his pocket and pulled out his own knife. "Oh, and what will you do?" Just as he finished his sentence, Jeff popped the kid in the nose. As Randy reached for his face, Jeff grabbed the kid's wrist and broke it. Randy screamed and Jeff grabbed the knife from his hand. Troy and Keith rushed Jeff, but Jeff was too quick. He threw Randy to the ground. Keith lashed out at him, but Jeff ducked and stabbed him in the arm. Keith dropped his knife and fell to the ground screaming. Troy rushed him too, but Jeff didn't even need the knife. He just punched Troy straight in the stomach and Troy went down. As he fell, he puked all over, Leo could do nothing but look in amazement at Jeff. Jeff, how'd you... was all he said. They saw the bus coming and knew they'd be blamed for the whole thing, so they started running as fast as they could. As they ran, they looked back and saw the bus driver rushing over to Randy and the others. As Jeff and Liu made it to school, they didn't dare tell what happened. All they did was sit and listen. Liu just thought of that as his brother beating up a few kids. But Jeff knew it was more. It was something scary. As he got that feeling, he felt how powerful it was. The urge to just hurt someone. He didn't like how it sounded, but he couldn't help feeling happy. He felt that strange feeling go away and stay away for the entire day of school. Even as he walked home due to the whole thing near the bus stop, and how now he probably wouldn't be taking the bus anymore, he felt happy. When he got home, his parents asked him how his day was, and he said in a somewhat ominous voice, "It was a wonderful day." Next morning, he heard a knock at his front door. He walked down to find two police officers at his door, his mother looking back at him with an angry look. "Jeff, these officers tell me that you attacked three kids, that it wasn't regular fighting, and that they were stabbed. Stabbed, son." Jeff's gaze fell to the floor, showing his mother that it was true. "Mom, they were the ones who pulled the knives on me and Liu." "Son," said one of the cops, "we found three kids, two stabbed, one having a bruise on his stomach, and we have witnesses proving that you fled the scene. Now, what does that tell us?" Jeff knew it was no use. He could say him and Liu had been attacked, but then there was no proof of it. Proof it was not them who attacked first. They couldn't say that they were fleeing, because truth be told, they were. So Jeff couldn't defend himself or Liu. "Son, call down your brother." Jeff couldn't do it since it was he who beat up all the kids. "Sir, it was me. I was the one who beat up the kids. Liu tried to hold me back, but he couldn't stop me." The cop looked at his partner and they both nod. "Well, kid, looks like a year in juvie." "Wait," says Liu. They all looked up to see him holding a knife. The officers pulled their guns and locked them on Liu. "It was me. I beat up those little punks. Have the marks to prove it." He lifted up his sleeves to reveal cuts and bruises, as if he was in a struggle. "Son, just put the knife down," said the officer. Liu held up the knife and dropped it to the ground. He put his hands up and walked over to the cops. "No, Liu, it was me. I did it." Jeff had tears running down his face. "Huh, poor bro. Trying to take the blame for what I did. Well, take me away." The police led Liu out to the patrol car. "Liu, tell them it was me. Tell them. I was the one who beat up those kids." Jeff's mother put her hands on his shoulders. "Jeff, please. You don't have to lie. We know it's Liu. You can stop." Jeff watched helplessly as a cop car speeds off with Liu still inside. A few minutes later, Jeff's dad pulled into the driveway, seeing Jeff's face and knowing something was wrong. "Son, what is it?" Jeff couldn't answer. His vocal cords were strained from crying. Instead, Jeff's mother walked his father inside to break the bad news to him as Jeff wept in the driveway. After an hour or so, Jeff walked back into the house, seeing that his parents were both shocked, sad, and disappointed. He couldn't look at them. He couldn't see how they thought of Liu when it was his fault. He just went to sleep, trying to get the whole thing off his mind. Two days went by with no word from Liu at JDC. No friends to hang out with. Nothing but sadness and guilt. That is, until Saturday, when Jeff is woken up by his mother with a happy, sunshiny face. "Jeff, it's the day," she said as she opened up the curtains and let light flood into his room. "What?" What's today? Asked Jeff as he stirred awake. Why, it's Billy's party. He was now fully awake. Mom, you're joking, right? You don't expect me to go to some kid's party after... There was a long pause. Jeff, we both know what happened. I think this party could be the thing that brightens up the past days. Now get dressed. Jeff's mother walked out of the room and downstairs to get ready herself. He fought himself to get up. He picked out a random shirt and pair of jeans and walked downstairs. He saw his mother and father all dressed up. His mother in a dress and his father in a suit. He thought, why would they ever wear such fancy clothes to a kid's party? Son, is that all you're going to wear? Said Jeff's mom. Better than wearing too much, he said. His mother pushed down the feeling to yell at him and hit it with a smile. Now, Jeff, we may be overdressed, but this is how you go if you want to make an impression, said his father. Jeff grunted and went back up to his room. I don't have any fancy clothes, yelled Jeff. He yelled downstairs. Just pick out something, called his mother. He looked around in his closet for what he would call fancy. He found a pair of black dress pants he had for special occasions and an undershirt. He couldn't find a shirt to go with it, though. He looked around and found only striped and patterned shirts, none of which would go with dress pants. Finally, he found a white hoodie and put it on. You're wearing that? They both said. His mother looked at her watch. Oh, no time to change. Let's just go, she said as she herded Jeff and his father out the door. They crossed the street over to Barbara and Billy's house. They knocked on the door and appeared Barbara, just like his parents. Oh my god, they butchered that. They knocked on the door and appeared Barbara, who was dressed just like his parents, way overdressed. As they walked inside, all Jeff could see were adults, no kids. The kids are out in the yard, Jeff. How about you go meet some of them? Said Barbara. Jeff walked outside to a yard full of kids. They were running around in weird cowboy costumes and shooting each other with plastic guns. He might as well be standing in a Toys R Us. Suddenly, a kid came up to him and handed him a toy gun and hat. Hey, wanna play? He said. Ah, no, kid. I'm way too old for this stuff. The kid looked at him with that weird puppy dog face. Please, said the kid. Fine, said Jeff. He put on a hat and started to pretend shoot at the kids. At first, he thought it was totally ridiculous. But then, he started to actually have fun. It might not have been super cool, but it was the first time he had done something that took his mind off of Liu. So he played with the kids for a while, until he heard a noise. A weird rolling noise. Then it hit him. Randy, Troy, and Keith all jumped over the fence on their skateboards. Jeff dropped the fake gun and ripped off the hat. Randy looked at Jeff with a burning hatred. Hello, Jeff, is it? He said. We have some unfinished business. Jeff saw his bruised nose. I think we're even. I beat the crap out of you, and you get my brother sent to JDC. Randy got an angry look in his eyes. Oh no, I don't go for even. I go for winning. You may have kicked our asses that one day, but not today. As he said that, Randy rushed at Jeff. They both fell to the ground. Randy punched Jeff in the nose, and Jeff grabbed him by the ears and headbutted him. Jeff pushed Randy off of him, and both rose to their feet. Kids were screaming and parents were running out of the house. Troy and Keith both pulled guns out of their pockets. No one interrupts or guns will fly, they said. Randy pulled a knife on Jeff and stabbed it into his shoulder. Jeff screamed and fell to his knees. Randy started kicking him in the face. After three kicks, Jeff grabs his foot and twists it, causing Randy to fall to the ground. Jeff stood up and walked towards the back door. Troy grabbed him. Need some help? He picks Jeff up by the back of the collar and throws him through the patio door. As Jeff tries to stand, he is kicked down to the ground. Randy repeatedly starts kicking Jeff until he starts to cough up blood. Come on, Jeff, fight me. He picks Jeff up and throws him into the kitchen. Randy sees a bottle of vodka on the counter and smashes the glass over Jeff's head. Fight! He throws Jeff back into the living room. Come on, Jeff, look at me. Jeff glances up, his face riddled with blood. I was the one who got your brother sent to JDC, and now you're just gonna sit here and let him rot in there for a whole year? You should be ashamed. Jeff starts to get up. Oh, finally, you stand and fight. Jeff is now to his feet, blood and vodka on his face. Once again, he gets that strange feeling, the one in which he hasn't felt for a while. Finally, he's up, says Randy, as he runs at Jeff. That's when it happens. Something inside Jeff snaps. His psyche is destroyed. All rational thinking is gone. All he can do is kill. He grabs Randy and pile drives him to the ground. He gets on top of him and punches him straight in the heart. The punch causes Randy's heart to stop. As Randy gasps for breath, Jeff hammers down on him. Punch after punch, blood gushes from Randy's body until he takes one final breath and dies. Everyone is looking at Jeff now. The parents, the crying kids, even Troy and Keith. Although they easily break from their gaze and point their guns at Jeff. Jeff sees the guns trained on him and runs for the stairs. As he runs, Troy and Keith let out fire on him, each shot missing. Jeff runs up the stairs. He hears Troy and Keith follow up behind. As they let out their final rounds of bullets, Jeff ducks into the bathroom. He grabs the towel rack and rips it off the wall. Troy and Keith race in, knives ready. Troy swings his knife at Jeff, who backs away and bangs the towel rack into Troy's face. Troy goes down hard, and now all that's left is Keith. He is more agile than Troy, though, and ducks when Jeff swings the towel rack. He dropped the knife and grabbed Jeff by the neck. He pushed him into the wall. A thing of bleach fell down on top of him from the top shelf. It burnt both of them, and they both started to scream. Jeff wiped his eyes as best as he could. He pulled back the towel rack and swung it straight into Keith's head. As he lay there, bleeding to death, he let out an ominous smile. What's so funny? Asked Jeff. Keith pulled out a lighter and switched it on. What's funny, he said, is that you're covered in bleach and alcohol. Jeff's eyes widened as Keith threw the lighter at him. As soon as the flame made contact with him, the flames ignited the alcohol into vodka. While the alcohol burned him, the bleach bleached his skin. Jeff let out a terrible screech as he caught on fire. He tried to roll out the fire, but it was no use. The alcohol had made him a walking inferno. He ran down the hall and fell down the stairs. Everybody started screaming as they saw Jeff, now a man on fire, dropped to the ground, nearly dead. The last thing Jeff saw was his mother and the other parents trying to extinguish the flame. That's when he passed out. When Jeff woke, he had a cast wrapped around his face. He couldn't see anything, but he felt a cast on his shoulder and stitches all over his body. He tried to stand up, but then realized that there was some tube in his arm. And when he tried to get up, it fell out, and the nurse rushed in. I don't think you can get out of bed just yet, she said, as she put him back in his bed and reinserted the tube. Jeff sat there with no vision, no idea of what his surroundings were. Finally, after hours, he heard his mother. Honey, are you okay? She asked. Jeff couldn't answer, though. His face was covered, and he was unable to speak. Oh, honey, I have great news. After all the witnesses told the police that Randy confessed of trying to attack you, they decided to let you go. This made Jeff almost bolt up, stopping halfway, remembering the tube coming out of his arm. He'll be out by tomorrow, and then you two will be able to be together again. Jeff's mother hugs Jeff and says her goodbyes. The next couple of weeks were those where Jeff was visited by his family. Then came the day where his bandages were to be removed. His family members were all there to see it, what he would look like. As the doctors unwrapped the bandages from Jeff's face, everyone was on the edge of their seats. They waited until the last bandage holding the cover over his face was almost removed. "Let's hope for the best," said the doctor. He quickly pulled the cloth, letting the rest fall from Jeff's face. Jeff's mother screams at the sight of his face. Leo and Jeff's dad stare awestruck at his face. "What? What happened to my face?" Jeff said. He rushed out of bed and ran to the bathroom. He looked in the mirror and saw the cause of the distress. His face. It's horrible. His lips were burnt to a deep shade of red. His face was turned into a pure white color, and his hair singed from brown to black. He slowly put his hand to his face. It had a sort of leathery feel to it now. He looked back at his family, then back at the mirror. "Jeff," said Leo, "it's not that bad." "Not that bad," said Jeff. "It's perfect." His family was equally surprised. Jeff started laughing uncontrollably. His parents noticed that his left eye and hand were twitching. "Jeff, are you okay?" "Okay. I've never felt more happy. Look at me. This face goes perfectly with me." He couldn't stop laughing. He stroked his face, feeling it, looking at it in the mirror. "What caused this?" "Well, you may recall that when Jeff was fighting Randy, something in his mind, his sanity, snapped. Now he was left as a crazy killing machine." "That is," his parents didn't know. "Doctor," said Jeff's mom, "is my son all right, you know, in the head?" "Oh yes, this behavior is typical for patients that have taken very large amount of painkillers. If his behavior doesn't change in a few weeks, bring him back here and we'll give him a psychological test." "Oh, thank you, doctor." Jeff's mother went over to Jeff. "Jeff, sweetie, it's time to go." Jeff looks away from the mirror, his face still formed into a crazy smile. "Okay, mommy." Jeff began to laugh as his mother took him by the shoulder. It took him to get his clothes. "This is what came in," said the lady at the desk. Jeff's mom looked down to see the black dress pants and white hoodie her son wore. Now they were clean of blood and stitched together. Jeff's mother led him to his room and made him put his clothes on. Then they left, not knowing that this was their final day of life. Later that night, Jeff's mother woke to a sound coming from the bathroom. It sounded as if someone was crying. She slowly walked over to see what it was. When she looked into the bathroom, she saw a horrendous sight. Jeff had taken a knife and carved a smile into his cheeks. "Jeff, what are you doing?" asked his mother. Jeff looked over to his mother. "I couldn't keep from smiling, Mommy. It hurt after a while. Now I can smile forever." Jeff's mother noticed his eyes ringed in black. "Jeff, your eyes!" His eyes were seemingly never closing. "I couldn't see my face. I got tired and my eyes started to close. I burned out the eyelids so I could forever see myself, my new face." Jeff's mother slowly started to back away, seeing that her son was going insane. "What's wrong, Mommy? Aren't I beautiful?" "Yes, son," she said. "Yes, you are. Let me go get Daddy so he can see your face." She ran into the room and shook Jeff's dad from his sleep. "Honey, get the gun, we..." She stopped as she saw Jeff in a doorway holding a knife. "Mommy, you lied." That's the last thing they hear as Jeff rushes them with the knife, gutting both of them. His brother Liu woke up, startled by some noise. He didn't hear anything else, so he just shut his eyes and tried to go back to sleep. As he was on the border of slumber, he got the strangest feeling that someone was watching him. He looked up before Jeff's hand covered his mouth. He slowly raised the knife, ready to plunge it into Liu. Liu thrashed here and there, trying to escape Jeff's grip. "Shh," Jeff said. "Just go to sleep." Whew, well, I don't know about you guys, but that one definitely took me back. That was a good one. Excuse me. Sorry, to cough real quick. Yeah, that was a good one. But, see, something, it's kind of funny. Whenever you read these stories whenever you're younger, you don't notice as much as you do when you're an adult. And something I kind of noticed, like, as a kid, I always thought that, oh, well, Jeff went completely insane because of the fight. But now, looking back and reading it again, it sounds like he was going insane anyway with all those so-called strange feelings and whatnot he was getting, even before the fight with Randy and stuff. So I feel like at some point in time he was gonna kill his parents and brother anyway, but I don't know, I could be wrong. Now, this next one, Smile Dog, it's significantly shorter, which is, like, good for me, at least, because, well, not really good for me, but at least, like, keep the episode at a reasonable length, because we're already at that good old 30-minute mark. But yeah, this next one is called Smile Dog. I'm looking at it. This looks to be a 10, maybe 20-minute read at most. I don't see it going past 20 minutes. But Smile Dog, I haven't read in a while, a very long while, so this is gonna kind of be new to me. It's gonna be like I'm reading it for the first time, pretty much. But let's get right into it. I first met in person with Mary E. in the summer of 2007. I had arranged with her husband of 15 years, Terrence, to see her for an interview. Mary had initially agreed. Since I was not a newsman, but rather an amateur writer gathering information for a few early college assignments, and, if all went according to plan, some pieces of fiction. We scheduled the interview for a particular weekend when I was in Chicago on unrelated business, but at the last moment, Mary changed her mind and locked herself in a couple's bedroom, refusing to meet with me. For half an hour, I sat with Terrence as we camped outside the bedroom door. I listened, and taking notes while he attempted fruitlessly to calm his wife. The things Mary said made little sense, but it fit with the pattern I was expecting. Though I could not see her, I could tell from her voice that she was crying, and more often than not, her objections to speaking with me centered around an incoherent diatribe on her dreams, her nightmares. Terrence apologized profusely when we ceased to exercise, and I did my best to take it in stride. Recall that I wasn't a reporter in search of a story, but merely a curious young man in search of information. Besides, I thought at the time I could perhaps find another similar case if I put my mind and resources to it. Mary E. was a sysop for a small Chicago-based bulletin board system in 1992 when she first encountered smile.jpg. And her life changed forever. She and Terrence had been married for only 5 months. Mary was one of an estimated 400 people who saw the image when it was posted as a hyperlink on a BBS. Though she is the only one who has spoken openly about the experience. The rest have remained anonymous, or are perhaps dead already. In 2005, when I was only in 10th grade, smile.jpg was first brought to my attention by my burgeoning interest in web-based phenomena. Mary was the most often cited victim of what is sometimes referred to as smile.dog. The being smile.jpg is reputed to display. What caught my interest, other than the obvious macabre elements of the cyber legend and my proclivity towards such things, was the sheer lack of information, usually to the point that people don't believe it even exists, other than as a rumor or hoax. It is unique because, though the entire phenomenon centers on a picture file, that file is nowhere to be found on the internet. Certainly, many photo-manipulated simulacra litter the web, showing up with the most frequency on sites such as image board 4chan, particularly the -X-focused paranormal subboard. It is suspected these are fakes because they do not have the effect the true smile.jpg is believed to have. Namely, sudden onset temporal lobe epilepsy and acute anxiety. This perpetrated reaction in the viewer is one of the reasons a phantom, like smile.jpg, is regarded with such disdain. Since it is patently absurd, though, depending on whom you ask, the reluctance to acknowledge smile.jpg's existence might be just as much out of fear as it is out of disbelief. Neither smile.jpg nor smile.dog is mentioned anywhere on Wikipedia, though the website features articles on such other, perhaps more scandalous shock sites as hello.jpg or two girls, one cup. Any attempt to create a page pertaining to smile.jpg is summarily deleted by any of the encyclopedia's many admins. Encounters with smile.jpg are the stuff of internet legend. Mary E.'s story is not unique. There are unverified rumors of smile.jpg showing up in the early days of Usenet, and even one persistent tale that in 2002, a hacker flooded the forums of humor and satire website Something Awful with a deluge of smile.dog pictures, rendering almost half the forum's users at the same time epileptic. It is also said that in the mid to late 90s that smile.jpg circulated on Usenet and as an attachment of a chain email with the subject line, "Smile, God loves you." Yet, despite the huge exposure these stunts would generate, there are very few people who admit to having experienced any of them, and no trace of the file or any link has ever been discovered. Those who claim to have seen smile.jpg often weakly joke that they were far too busy to save a copy of the picture to their hard drive. However, all alleged victims offer the same description of the photo. A dog-like creature, usually described as appearing similar to a Siberian husky, illuminated by the flash of the camera, sits in a dim room, the only background detail that is visible being a human hand extending from the darkness near the left side of the frame. The hand is empty, but it is usually described as beckoning. Of course, most attention is given to the dog or dog creature, as some victims are more certain than others about what they claim to have seen. The muzzle of the beast is reputedly split into a wide grin, revealing two rows of very white, very straight, very sharp, very human-looking teeth. This is, of course, not a description given immediately after viewing the picture, but rather a recollection of the victims who claimed to have seen the picture endlessly repeated in their mind's eye during the time they are, in reality, having epileptic fits. These fits are reported to continue indeterminably, often while the victims sleep, resulting in very vivid and disturbing nightmares. These may be treated with medication, though in some cases it is more effective than others. Mary E., I assumed, was not on effective medication. That was why after my visit to her apartment in 2007, I sent out feelers to several folklore and urban legend oriented news groups, websites, and mailing lists, hoping to find a name of a supposed victim of smile.jpg who felt more interested in talking about their experiences. For a time, nothing happened, and at length, I forgot completely about my pursuits. Since I had begun my freshman year of college, I was quite busy. Mary contacted me via email, however, near the beginning of March 2008. Subject: last summer's interview. Dear Mr. L, I am incredibly sorry about my behavior last summer when you came to interview me. I hope you understand that it was no fault of yours, but rather my own problems that led me to act out as I did. I realize that I could have handled the situation more decorously. However, I hope you will forgive me. At the time, I was afraid. You see, for 15 years I have been haunted by smile.jpg. Smile.dog comes to me in my sleep every night. I know that sounds silly, but it is true. There is an ineffable quality about my dreams, my nightmares, that make them completely unlike any real dreams I've ever had. I do not move and do not speak. I simply look ahead, and the only thing ahead of me is a scene from that horrible picture. I see the beckoning hand, and I see smile.dog. It talks to me. It is not a dog, of course, though I am not quite sure what it really is. It tells me it will leave me alone, if only I do as it asks. All I must do, it says, is spread the word. That is how it phrases its demands, and I know exactly what it means. It wants me to show it to someone else. And I could. The week after my incident, I received in the mail a manila envelope with no return address. Inside was only a 3.5-inch floppy diskette. Without having to check, I knew precisely what was on it. I thought for a long time about my options. I could show it to a stranger, a coworker. I could even show it to Terrence, as much as the idea disgusted me. And what would happen then? Well, if smile.dog kept its word, I could sleep. Yet, if it lied, what would I do? And who was to say something worse would not come for me if I did as the creature asked? So, I did nothing for 15 years. Though I kept the diskette hidden amongst my things, every night for 15 years, smile.dog has come to me in my sleep and demanded that I spread the word. For 15 years I have stood strong, though there have been hard times. Many of my fellow victims on a BBS board where I first encountered smile.jpg stopped posting. I heard some of them committed suicide. Others remained completely silent, simply disappearing off the face of the web. They are the ones I worry about the most. I sincerely hope you forgive me, Mr. L, but last summer when you contacted me and my husband about an interview, I was near the breaking point. I decided I was going to give you the floppy diskette. I did not care if smile.dog was lying or not. I wanted it to end. You were a stranger, someone I had no connection with, and I thought I would not feel sorrow when you took the diskette as part of your research and sealed your fate. Before you arrived, I realized what I was doing, was plotting to ruin your life. I could not stand a thought, and in fact, I still cannot. I am ashamed, Mr. L, and I hope that this warning will dissuade you from further investigation of Smile.jpg. You may in time encounter someone who is, if not weaker than I, then wholly more depraved. Someone who will not hesitate to follow Smile.dog's orders. Stop while you are still whole. Sincerely, Mary E. Terrence contacted me later that month with the news that his wife had killed herself while cleaning up the various things she left behind, closing email accounts and the like. He happened upon the above message. He was a man in shambles. He wept as he told me to listen to his wife's advice. He found a diskette, he revealed, and burned it until it was nothing but a stinking pile of blackened plastic. The part that most disturbed him, however, was how the diskette had hissed as it melted, like some sort of animal, he said. I will admit that I was a little uncertain about how to respond to this. At first, I thought perhaps it was a joke, with the couple belatedly playing with the situation in order to get a rise out of me. A quick check of several Chicago newspapers' online obituaries, however, proved that Mary E. was indeed dead. There was, of course, no mention of suicide in the article. I decided that, for a time at least, I would not further pursue the subject of Smile.jpg, especially since I had finals coming up at the end of May. But the world has odd ways of testing us. Almost a full year after I'd returned from my disastrous interview at Mary E., I received another email. Hello. I found your email address through a mailing list. Your profile said you're interested in SmileDog. I have saw it. It is not as bad as everyone says. I've sent it to you here, just spreading the word. Smiley face. The final line chilled me to the bone. According to my email client, there is one final attachment called, naturally, smile.jpg. I considered downloading it for some time. It was most likely a fake, I imagined. And even if it weren't, I was never wholly convinced of SmileJPEG's peculiar powers. Mary E.'s account had shaken me, yes, but she was probably mentally unbalanced anyway. After all, how could a simple image do what Smile.jpg was said to accomplish? What sort of creature was it that could break one's mind with only the power of the eye? And if such things were patently absurd, then why did the legend exist at all? If I downloaded the image, if I looked at it, and if Mary turned out to be correct, if Smile.dog came to me in my dreams demanding I spread the word, what would I do? Would I live my life as Mary had, fighting against the urge to give in until I died? Or would I simply spread the word, eager to be put to rest? And if I chose the latter route, how could I do it? Whom would I burden in turn? If I went through my earlier intention to write a short article about Smile.jpg, I decided I could attach it as evidence, and anyone who read the article, anyone who took interest would be affected. And even assuming the Smile.jpg attached to the email was genuine, would I be capricious enough to save myself in that manner? Could I spread the word? Yes. Yes, I could. Ooh, that was a good one. So at the end of the article, it's a picture of the smile dog. And I do remember it being creepy. This picture is definitely kind of creepy here. But I hope everyone enjoyed those two little read-alongs, because I definitely enjoyed them. It's definitely worth pushing out the almost another hour-long episode. I didn't expect to just lose myself in them like that. And I think it's funny that I was sitting here like, oh, this will only be like a 15-minute read, like 20 minutes max, and I think it ended up going to like 25, 30 minutes, but I'm not complaining. That was a good read. But all right, everyone, those two stories were the only reads I'm really doing. So let's go ahead and get to the end of this. And all right, so if you guys would like to get updates on the show and interact with a good old community that also listens to the show, check out the Facebook page at the Dark Cryptids Podcast. Alternatively, if you ever want to get in contact with me, you could just go to the Facebook page and message me on there, or you could check out the Instagram at the Dark Cryptids Podcast. Now, the Instagram isn't active, but I do keep it going as an alternative form of being able to contact me in order to provide feedback, submit listener stories, or anything else that strikes your fancy. So if you message me on the Facebook page or Instagram, I will get back to you within 24 to 48 hours. But before we go today, we're gonna list off the good old listener statistics. All right, let's start with listening platforms. I'm gonna list the top two. 41% of you guys listen on Apple Podcasts, which is a top listening platform. And coming in second is 31% of y'all listen to me on Spotify. Sorry, someone just screamed outside my apartment. Gender, 49% of y'all that listen to me are female. And 44% are male. So it looks like females are the top listeners of the podcast. And the age group that listens to my podcast the most is going to be from the ages of 35 to 44. Coming into a close second and third is the ages of 45 to 59 and 28 to 34. So, you could say a good 60% of y'all that listen to me are between the ages of 28 and 59. So, I do appreciate all those viewerships from y'all. Now, the one y'all probably been waiting for to see if I call your city out, we've got United States as 71% of the listeners. United Kingdom makes up 8%, Canada makes up 6%. In the United States, the most listened to top two states, actually we'll do top three states. It's gonna be California in first place for 10% of total views, Texas for 9%, and Florida for 8%. The top city actually changed from what we are used to. The top city that listens to the podcast is gonna be Los Angeles, California. It's been Santa Ana, California for a while, but Los Angeles beat Santa Ana by 2%. So 11% of our listenership comes from Los Angeles, California. So I really do appreciate y'all for that. Really do appreciate you. Thank you, everyone that's in Los Angeles. Now, what I like to do to make the little guys feel good too is I go to the lowest state with the lowest views. So, I have never heard of this city, but the lowest state is Alaska, and the city is Wasilla. So, I'm just gonna assume that we have one listener out there in Wasilla, Alaska. I know you might be the only one in Alaska that listens, but either way, I appreciate all the support. Thank you very much. Once again, if you guys want to interact with the podcast more, just check out those pages and web pages I directed you to. And as always, the web pages I use for the readings today will be in the description, so check that out if you want to read them for yourself. But thank you everyone for stopping by. I hope you guys have an amazing weekend, and I hope you guys have a safe night. Stay creepy, everyone.